Hello, friend. I'm so glad you're here. My name is Zach Holt, and this is Come to the Table. Some of our most intimate conversations happen at the kitchen table. Walls crumble as space is created to know one another more deeply. Something special happens when we let down our guard, pull up a chair, and simply be who we are, where we are. In our time together, we will step into the shoes of others through recovery stories of redemption, offer resources and connections for those in need, and come together as a community starving for revival in our region. So if you're hungry, you came to the right place. We're so glad to have a special guest with us this week. One of our guys in 117, Ian, is in the studio with us. And really excited to have him. So Ian, say hi.
Hello, hi.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How does your story start? We'll just jump into it.
How did my story start? I mean, I don't know. What parts are you talking about?
Yeah, so where are you from?
I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, born and raised.
Like Southside?
Yep. Southside. I moved all over, but okay. I graduated from Huguenot, so.
Huguenot High School.
Yeah,
okay.
Huguenot.
Yeah, we used to beat y'all in tennis.
I was in the marching band for a little bit.
Okay. What'd you play?
I played snare drum.
Snare drum?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like drumline stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You still play any?
No, not for real. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I could.
Yeah. You know
what I
mean? You don't like randomly like look for things to drum on? You know, like so, you know, like walls or.
I used to, but.
God, I can totally drum on that.
Totally. Yeah. Especially like when I go to like different churches and they don't have like drummers. Like,
uh huh. Yeah. I got that. I didn't know you played percussion. We'll have to get you on the. You know how to play the cajon? You know what I'm talking about? It's like that. It's like a box.
And
you like sit on it, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it.
You could probably keep a rhythm on
Most
that.
Definitely.
We'll have to
Most
put
definitely.
You on. We'll have to put you on. So you grew up, went to Huguenot High School.
Yeah.
What was it like for you growing up?
Well, my mom always had, you know, was an entrepreneur. She always did hair.
Okay.
And it was six of us.
Uh-huh.
None of our fathers were in our lives. But my mom just somehow, some way. Mm. She made a way. I don't see how she did it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? That's one reason I don't have children now, because mm-hmm. I feel like I can't, if I can barely take care of myself, I can't take care of another child, another human being. So, bounced around a lot. Never went hungry, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, used to get best dressed, you know, like in school. Like, you know, they didn't, from the outside looking in, you wouldn't know what it, like, my living situation was.
Yeah.
It was tough sometimes, but as a child, I feel like I had a great childhood, you know. Always knew that it could be worse, you know, so.
Did you make a lot of friends? Do you have a lot of friends growing
Most
up?
Most definitely.
Yeah, real sociable.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Did you play any sports?
A little bit, but I was a class clown, so.
Okay, that was your
sport.
You
used to always, you know, a lot of fighting and just class clown stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Did you do well in school?
Parts of it. Uh-huh. Like growing up, like middle school, never had a problem. But once I reached like ninth grade and got into women and stuff like that, I don't know. I just felt like because my mom was trying to provide, you know what I mean? So it's like my oldest sister is who took care of, she's who watched us while my mom was at work. Like my mom sometimes has worked like three jobs, you know? Like, but growing up, I do feel like I had a great childhood. I feel like I had more fun than good. It was a household. Like one time we lived in a one-bedroom apartment, six kids. Like social services we got into a something happened. My mom was renting an apartment from a guy, and the guy got into some type of dispute, and when social services was at the addiction, because it's six kids in a one-bedroom apartment. But she was like, "Yo, your house is cleaner than mine." Like. You know, like, so it was like, I could put y'all in the hotel for a little bit, but it's like, I'm not going to take your kids from you.
Yeah.
You know, so, but just my mom was, that's my rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Christ Yeshua is my rock, but, yeah.
Yeah. Like, your mom's there.
She's a fighter. Like, she always calls herself a mama bear.
That's so funny you say that, because whenever, so I had a chance to meet her the other week, And I texted Victoria. I was like, "Man, she's like a lioness." You
That's
know what
exactly
I'm
what Jay, my sponsor calls her.
she's fierce, man.
And the reason that is because she was an only child.
Yeah,
you know, her mom was a college professor, you know, teacher. Like, but her mom died when she was, I think my mom might have been, I want to say 21.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to learn fast. Mm-hmm. You know, she was always sheltered. So being that she's the only child, I don't have uncles, aunts. Like, mm-hmm. it's just me and my siblings. Like, that's my, you know, I don't really have cousins.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so. Yeah. But yeah, but growing up, it was six kids in a house, period. Because, you know, we had good times. Six kids in a house is always, you know, something going on. You know, uh-huh. I wouldn't say it was bad.
Yeah. Did y'all get along?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
You know, this kid, you know, sure. siblings going to fight. But, four girls, two boys. Mm-hmm. I'm the middle child.
Okay.
I was actually a twin. My mom had, it's my older sister, my second older sister, then it's me. And then I have two twin younger sisters. Mm-hmm. And I have my little brother. He was a twin also. Mm-hmm. So my mom would have had, instead of six, she would have had eight.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. So when did kind of trouble start brewing, or when did you start kind of pushing the envelope? So you're already a class clown, mm-hmm. so you kind of already sort of yeah. get into a little mischief. Yeah. When did it kind of turn?
I feel like I always, you know, I was always in something, mm-hmm. especially like around the age of I just feel like my whole life, because I always felt like I was grown. I don't know why. When I was a baby, I just felt like I was grown. My mom said I was walking at like 8 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, 8 months. But really, as far as like, it would have to be when I picked up my drug of choice, mm-hmm. my DOC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so I smoked weed through high school, experimented with, like, you know, pills, mm-hmm. like, in my mom's cabinet, mm-hmm. stuff mm-hmm. like that. But it took off when I started smoking crack.
Yeah.
Yeah, crack cocaine.
When did that happen?
The age of 20.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see it coming, or you just...
No, like I said, I was always into something. Mm-hmm. So, like, growing up, like, teenage, you know, breaking the law, like, never getting caught for it, like, the grace of mercy mm-hmm. is just crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, B&E's was my thing in high school, like, with, you know, just trying to fit in because that wasn't me. Yeah. But just the grace and mercy, and so... At the age of 20, I found somebody, a drug dealer. Mm-hmm. I saw him stash it somewhere, and when he walked off the block or, you know, off the street, I went and took it. And just out of just curiosity killed the cat, like, mm-hmm. just thinking, like, I didn't try it a lot. You know, nothing's going to, you know, weed was my first love.
Mm-hmm.
I never had an upper, you know, mm-hmm. so it was just like when I did that, it was a wrap. It just took me.
Yeah, yeah.
I went within my first 3 months of getting high. I was in my first treatment center at the age of 20.
Yeah.
The healing place in Richmond. Yeah. Like a homeless shelter with a 12, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it got bad.
Yeah. Mine escalated. It went from, you know, trying weed on a Friday and smoking crack on a Monday, you mm-hmm. know, and it was like instant. You know, instant.
Oh,
I was like, I want to feel this way forever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's so, so deceitful, you know.
Most definitely.
Because you don't even know what you're in for. You know?
I was
thinking about the hooks of the enemy, man. You don't even know. It's so subtle the way this mm-hmm. thing slide in.
But looking back on it, I definitely could see it coming. Like, mm-hmm. like you used to smoke 8 blunts a day. Mm-hmm. Like just everything that I did, mm-hmm. I overdid it. You mm-hmm. know, I always like just pushing mm-hmm. the envelope. You yeah. know, and abusing God's grace and mercy, just because I always felt like I got away with this, or mm-hmm. you know. He
sometimes getting away with everything is not a good thing for
at
us.
At all, most definitely.
You know? So you mentioned how something along the lines of you know, kind of wanting to be accepted. So, mm-hmm. You know, kind of breaking bad a little bit around that.
So, being that the six of us,
uh-huh.
it was just me and four other girls. I'm 7 years older than my brother.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just me and four girls and raised by a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wow, you know, so I always, I didn't have a brother. And then to come to find out I was a twin,
mm-hmm.
you know, like my mom had a miscarriage with my twin. And just my whole, like, you know, we're definitely getting that, but my whole birth and everything, like, mm-hmm. like it, I know it's a calling on my life, mm-hmm. you know. But just wasn't getting the attention at home because my mom was working.
Sure.
You know, so... go to school and act out. Like, mm-hmm. my mom come up to school with a spatula, like, in front of everybody, like, walk in the classroom, you know? So, my mom definitely didn't play.
Yeah. So, you were looking for some way to stand out, some way to say, you know,
then also craving attention, like, mm-hmm. you know, you don't know that psychologically, you mm-hmm. know, as a child. But, yeah, I was definitely, because I wasn't getting the attention mm-hmm. that I needed at home. I'm around four girls, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, because I can relate in that I had people around me, like I had friends, but I didn't feel accepted. So, and it was something about, you know, the crowd that was smoking weed and getting in trouble that, like, when I started running with them, like, I felt accepted. You know, I felt like I was part, of something, you know, even if it was, you know, for the wrong things. It's not till later you kind of are able to, you know, look back on it and see, like, what it really was. You know, I thought it was just something fun to do, you know, but it was like, no, there's something deeper in there, but you can't defeat what you don't define, you know? And so it's kind of a losing battle trying to fight something that you have no idea what it is, you know, but it's like you get perspective and wisdom later, you know, and you're able to see what it was.
Like looking, like growing up, I used to ask why a lot, you know, but like now, this is where I'm at in life and in my relationship with God, like I see like nothing is in vain. Like, you know, like he can use whoever. And like, it's just like everything has, I don't believe in a coincidence. You know what I mean? Like when people say, my sponsors say, when people say it's a coincidence, that's just God make, working a miracle and remaining anonymous.
That's right.
Or something like that. I forgot.
But, no, no, that's good.
But I just know it was a reason behind my story.
So where did it, so you know, around the age of 20, using hard for 3 months, went to treatment center.
Went to treatment.
How did you know the first time you went to treatment, how did that happen?
Okay, so my mom caught me getting high. My mom is very spiritual. So I was working at Bottoms Up Pizza at the time, and Chicago Bottom, and my mom lived over Northside, off of Brooklyn Park, and she didn't know I was, like, you know, sneaking. Like, it's just like when God, my mom hears God's voice. So, and it's like she's never wrong. Like, it's like kind of scary. You know what I mean? But she was ready to go to work. I just got off from my own working at Bottoms Up, and she left the house. So I go on the back porch, and I'm getting high. I got a dinner plate with drugs on it, getting high. And then she said, this is the after story, what I hear, but while I'm getting high, she sat there and watched me. I don't know how long she was watching me, but she said she was going to work, and God told her to turn around. Like, no, go turn around. So she sat and watched me, and so I saw the blinds move, so I'm like, what is that? And I walk in the house, and my mom says, what were you doing? She was like, what you were smoking? I said, a cigarette, and tried to walk off. She's like, no. She was like, that's a funny looking cigarette. And so she was like, I don't care what you do or where you go, but you gotta leave, get out of here now. So like, I started getting high in the summer of 2017. Like around November, December, October, it's cold, you know, it was cold. I was sleeping on her back porch, like every, like even in the snow where she just, it was hard for her to watch, like hearing talking to her now, like it was hard. Like she had to watch me like buy a thermal blanket, you know, like it just took me that fast. So it got so cold where she was like she dropped me off at the healing place. Did a little bit, learned a little bit, went back out, wasn't ready. You know, I just started getting high 3 months ago. So it's just been a revolving door of jails, recovery, institutions, deaths, like, you know.
So when you get out the first time from the healing place, I mean, was there any reprieve, any break, or I mean, was it,
no,
it real quick, just right,
no,
back at it?
Right back at it, and because when she dropped me off the healing place, I still had the last check from Bottoms Up. You know, they was like, you can't work here, but so when we got to leave on the weekends, I went and picked that check, and I got put out of there, and my mom, still trying to, you know, because this is new, like, and nobody would ever expect me, you know, for those to be my, you know, my, for that to be a part of my story. It was hard for a lot of people. So then she sent me to Charlotte, North Carolina, the Charlotte Rescue Mission. I did a little couple months and got kicked out of there, get sent back, you know, and just been, like, she's just been walking with me along this whole journey. And it's been, man. Yeah.
How did your heart feel when she, because I think, you know, boundaries are good, mm-hmm. you know, and accountability is good. Mm-hmm. You know, I still remember, you know, call my mom, you know, from jail and was like trying to get her to put money on my books. And, she was done. She was done. And she just said, nope. And I was like, what do you mean? I couldn't hear you. She said, nope. And, so it was, you know, kind of hard to swallow.
With my situation, me and my mother relationship, she never gave me money to get high.
Yeah.
Like, I buy you a pack of cigarettes. Like, mom, can I get this for a cigarette? I buy you a pack of cigarettes. No, but I'm not going to give you no cash.
Yeah.
But she was always there.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just had to respect it.
Yeah.
But I'm just grateful that I didn't burn that bridge. Mm-hmm. You know, it was tough sometimes, but.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. And, you know, Jesus says, you know, somebody, I can't remember which one of them asks, maybe Peter asks, how many times should I forgive him? You know, mm-hmm. 7 times. And he's like, No.
Yeah.
7 times 70.
Yeah.
And, that's what love does, is it doesn't quit on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it never gives up and it never falls short.
Yeah.
So after you leave the space in Charlotte, the story kind of continues.
It just continues. Like, it's not a recovery, like, place that I haven't been in Richmond.
Yeah.
Like, I've been to about 14, at least 14 treatment centers. I went to the psych ward like twice.
Yeah.
You know, like, jails and institutions. Yeah, I was definitely,
it's a promise. Yeah. Do you feel like you were, learning things along the way?
Almost definitely. I learned from every relapse. Mm-hmm. You know, like, just, you know, I come in running to the recovery, mm-hmm. grab a little knowledge, just enough to
couple nuggets.
take me out, you know, take me back out there and take somebody with me.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, nothing is in vain. Mm-hmm. Like, I had to, like, because I was hard-headed.
Yeah.
Like, he had to, that was his way of correction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, correcting me, and basically molding me.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's almost like when I bounced through a bunch of them, and it was like what they did for me, like, yeah, they gave me good knowledge, but they also gave me an awareness that, like, you are a drug addict.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Before I went to treatment for the first, like, I was like, man, I just like to party, you know? But then it's like once that language and that label hits you and you're like, I'm a drug addict. I look in the mirror. I'm a drug addict.
Yeah.
So then I have knowledge and awareness of this terrible, you know, situation, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, I can't hide anymore and pretend like it's not a thing.
Yeah.
So now I'm like all the time just trying to bury it, and I'm carrying the shame on my back, you know.
Yeah.
And then I heard this crazy explanation earlier. So there's a part in Romans 7.
Mm. Romans is my favorite book in the Bible.
Yeah. So Romans 7 is like where Paul is having this like crazy back and forth. And he's like, you know, the thing that I know I should do, I can't do it. And every time I try and do good, evil's right there with me.
Mm-hmm.
And in verse 24, he says, who will rescue me from this body of death?
Mm-hmm.
And what he's talking about, the body of death. So back in one of the punishments of the Romans, obviously it was crucifixion, but another one, like if you murdered somebody, they could literally take the corpse of the person you murdered, and they would put them on your back. So what would happen is that, it's crazy. So that body, as it decomposed, would poison you, and then you would die. So it's like this.
That is insane.
It's wild.
Yeah, that's wild.
So
learn something new every day.
I never knew it. And so I started digging in because I'd heard something about body of death, and I looked back, and it's like, that's what was happening to me. Mm. It was like when I had the awareness that I am a drug addict and I'm hopeless in this thing, but I hadn't allowed the power to displace my addiction yet. Mm. I hadn't allowed the love of the Father to come into my heart and purge me of all of that brokenness and darkness. So it was like I was just carrying around a corpse, you know, that was like slowly just like poisoning me, you know, over time. It was like I had all this weight on my back, like carrying this addiction that I knew was killing me.
I
knew it, but it was like I couldn't shake it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a death sentence that I had accepted.
Yep.
And I was like, eventually one of these shots of dope is just going to take me out. And that's just how it's going to be, you know?
See, with me, I knew, like I said, I just knew that I always had a calling on my life. Uh-huh. So, like, I would be the person preaching to the people, this is...
I can 100%.
You know, so it's like...
How'd they respond to that?
They don't want to hear, like, hey, be quiet. Like, we don't want to hear that. But
It's not good, like, crack conversation.
Yeah. Like, you're running the mood. I'm like, yo, I got to go to Rubicon. I gotta go back to RBHA. They'll laugh or whatever, but, you know. But I just, like the way that I look at it now, like, I had to go through that. That was the only thing that was going to make me, mm-hmm. I had to bump my head 14 times.
Yeah.
You know? So, because I was hard. I always knew, like, he had me. Mm-hmm. And I knew that this wasn't, you know, I saw visions of, you know, my visions changed of what I wanted, you know, in life or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and it continued to change. But I knew that I was going to be somebody mm-hmm. one day, regardless of getting high. Like, yeah. I knew this is not the end for me, you know, but I always pushed the envelope because mm-hmm. I knew he had me. But I learned, understand now, my last fentanyl overdose, that was number 14. And that one, like, woke me up. Like,
why? What was it about it?
I don't know. Like, even, like, all of my overdoses, like, it's, I learned something from each one. But, like, this one was because I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I just remember getting high. It was 7 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I wake up 2 days later. Mm. And I'm like, and I'm straight into the hospital. And they was like, you was in a coma. Somebody found you dead in the alley in their Fairfield pool. Mm. And my first reaction was, what did y'all find? Oh, you know, because I, you know, when I went down, you know, that's how I know it's nothing but God, you know, because whoever found me could easily just left me there. Yeah. Or, you know, they had the decency to run my pockets. I'm thankful because I'd probably be in jail right now.
Yeah.
So, because being on probation and stuff. So it's just the grace and mercy.
Yeah.
So it just woke me. When I came back, and I couldn't eat for like 24 hours because like you was in a coma, like, so I'm dehydrated. I've been getting high for the past couple of months, and I'm like, yo, that could have been it. Yeah. I don't even remember. Like, I don't even like. I just wake up 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was a big moment.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah,
most definitely. But so, I didn't. But even but I each overdose is like my first one. Like this was back in like 2018, I think 19. Mm-hmm. No, it was about 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I didn't have 14 overdoses in the past 4 years.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah. Like,
wow. And each one.
Each one, like, I remember one of them, I overdosed. I don't know. I got high in an abandoned house with a girl, and I don't know how I made it back to 25th Street. It was mm-hmm. right down the street. But I know that it was God leading me back there because I would have been dead in the abandoned house. Yeah. But I just. Right there in front of the precinct on 25th Street, I overdosed right there on the corner. And the lady, I just remember uttering the blood of Jesus, the blood of Jesus, the mm-hmm. blood of Jesus. It was like, I sounded like, you know, like the salesman at the auctions. Like, but I'm, you know, the ambulance is like holding me down, and that's just the last thing. And that's what every overdose, that's what it feels like, except for this last one, because it was like, I didn't know, but every overdose, I had to get hit with Narcan at least mm-hmm. 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, like, the coming back, like, that's not, like, the overdosing and whatever that Narcan, mm-hmm. what it does mm-hmm. to you, is not a good feeling.
Yeah.
And so I overdosed, I came back, and I went to the house for, like, 3 days, slept, you know, got my energy back,
mm-hmm.
went back to the mm-hmm. same store, and the lady that works in the store today,
mm-hmm.
she told me, she was like, what? She said, whatever you did, like, don't do that again. She's a Middle Eastern lady, and she said, like, your body was bouncing off the ground. She was like you look like it was like a possessed person.
Wow.
She was like, but every overdose, the only way I can explain it is it feels like the enemy
mm-hmm.
and my Savior mm-hmm. Christ
mm-hmm.
is fighting over my body. Like, my God is like, mm-hmm. not yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wild experience. I've had where I just fell out, went mm-hmm. black, mm-hmm. middle of a Panera, you mm-hmm. know, just like crazy, you know, just, but man, there was one where, dude, it was like I was laying on the ground and like this, the ground was like coming up around me, like a tomb.
Like
I felt like I was being swallowed into darkness, dude. And it was like, there were people over top of me and I couldn't hear them saying, and like, I was trying to scream and ask for help. And like, I couldn't make words. And it was like, I just felt myself sinking deeper and deeper and deeper. And then they hit me and it like reversed,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it would, dude, it was, and the insanity of it is that I went right back.
Right back.
Right back.
A couple times.
You know? And it's like literally, I look back on it now, I'm like, man, that was like God showing you where your heart was and the danger that you were in. Yeah. And I'm just, you know, whatever. Like it didn't even faze me.
Yeah, like the first, I don't think my brain processed what happened until maybe, you know, I got up there like 4 or 5, like, yo, I overdosed. Like, but opiates wasn't my drug of choice.
Right.
So it's like I was just rolling dice, you know. Now they put fentanyl on everything. So it was just I had an overdose from smoking crack, like in another convenience store. Yeah. So like, but like you said, like that my first one, it just didn't process. Like I woke up in MCV hospital, and when I came back, so my mom has every time I call overdose and they let me call, so I call her. It's how she come get me. I get right out of the car, like, but. She said the doctor, she heard the doctor tell, she said, she came in there and she was like, that's your son? And she was like, yeah. She was like, that one, every time he comes back, like he comes back fighting. Like that's why I have to be restrained. I don't know what it is, but I come back like fighting. And that's just always, it's just like, but the first one, woke up in the hospital and went right out the hospital door, like didn't even process it. Went right back to it, like, yo, that could have been your life. Somebody found somebody. My first overdose. Somebody threw me out of the car that knows my mom, you know, like, and some lady, I don't know. She said the doctor said some Caucasian lady found me. She was jogging and found me laying in somebody's yard.
Wow, angel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely.
So after number 14.
it sounds crazy because I know people that's been getting high, like IV use, you know, heroin since the 70s, 80s.
They ain't had that many.
No. You know, and they have one and it's gone. Mm-hmm. I done had 14 and never had been an opiate, you know.
Do you feel like today, because of all of that, do you feel like you have a greater appreciation for your life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, do you, you know, knowing him, knowing his goodness, knowing the life that you've got, the grace you've been shown, do you feel like it's given you a greater appreciation for the life that you have?
Most definitely.
Would you just so casually, because that's why I look back and I'm like, dude, how could I just throw all of it away? Just throw my life, just give my life, you know?
Yeah. I just, you know, like seeing you, I can't, you know, because this is the Zach that I know.
Yeah.
So when you tell me, you know, when I hear, you know, some of your story, I'm like, I can't even picture that.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, like, I had to be beaten. I had to be hitting. I had to bump my head that many times to get to the understanding, like, yo, I can't do that. All right, God, you got it. Okay.
Yeah.
The 14 times, that's hard hitting. Like,
7 plus 7. Yeah. two complete. Yeah.
And it got to the point, the only reason I know it's 14 because my mom has kept count. I remember when it got to around, like, 10, 11, 12, I was just like, was it 11 or 12? Like, I started losing count.
That's wild, man. Yeah. So we're about at our 30-minute mark, and I want to come back and have another conversation, and I want to hear specifically about what walking in recovery this time has been like for you, you know, like what's different about it. You know, why don't you share a little bit about, you know, kind of your music and how that's an outlet for you. And so we'll kind of dive in a little bit more in the next episode around kind of your experience in victory. It's amazing to hear, and like you can't, and I'm sure everybody that's hearing this is like, man, 14 times, man, God has a plan for that man, you know.
I'm only 27, man. You know, like I just
got a lot of life in front of you. Yeah. So if you had 60 seconds as we close to speak directly into the ear of somebody that's still struggling in addiction, what would you say to them?
To let go, like to fully, like you just, and I understand because my process was a process, you know, but it gets farther. It gets easier when you just stop fighting, when you allow, you know, and this is on an everyday basis, you know, just you have to let go. Stop fighting. Stop trying to, you know, control and, you know, do it your way. Yeah. Just stop fighting.
Just let it go.
Yeah. Let him guide your steps.
Yeah. He'll take it. He'll take it.
If you allow it to. If you allow it.
Yeah. He's not going to make you. Yeah. He's not going to take your addiction. You have to offer it. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Every day.
Daily choice. Yeah. Well, friend, I'm so glad that you were able to join us today on this episode of Come to the Table. We really hope that it's been an encouragement to your recovery, or perhaps created in you a curiosity of what it could look like to live into a radical new mindset of selfless service to others. If there's any way our ministry can come beside you, partner with you, connect you with resources, any support at all that we can offer, you can reach out to me, Zach Holt, at thetablebristol117@gmail.com. Friend, you do not have to walk this road alone. There's a family that wants to come around you and walk beside you. So as we leave, I encourage you to go with grace and peace. We'll see you next time.